Just to make a quick recording. So my last name is Wells, W-E-L-L-E-S. I'm from Texas. I'm a Longhorn. I graduated Phi Beta Kappa from Texas in 2005. My dad's dad was a Rhodes Scholar. Sam Wells was born in Oklahoma, but they moved to New Jersey. His dad was an Episcopal priest. He became a canon. So Canon Sam Wells was my grandpa's dad. He actually saw Tchaikovsky open Carnegie Hall. So my dad's dad's dad was Canon Sam Wells, and he was there to see Tchaikovsky at Carnegie Hall for the first concert. My dad's dad was named Sam. He was a Rhodes Scholar. He had been born in Oklahoma, but they moved to New Jersey. And obviously his dad had gone to seminary school in New York City or near there. My dad was born in New York City in 1956. And then for a living, my dad got a job working at the Texas state government. He had a prestigious job. He retired at a rate 4 analyst. But it was me and my mom and my sister. Austin has some kind of I guess what I can call everybody's attention to is the other kids in Austin. Who do you guys think those are? The other, W's kids. Literally W's kids. Laura, Jenna Bush was at UT at the same time I was. They went to Austin High School, but other than W's kids, think about who are the other people in school. You want everybody else to be pretty smart because you need some kind of a cohort. But, in terms of the playing field, asked me what all that looked like. We had no money. It was like no money, nothing money. I thought all the other kids had so much money. I just thought everybody, just in Austin, Texas, the other kids, did they have a lot of, that's my memory of it. In Austin, I was at school with everybody else. I think exactly our house had no money. How I remember it is our house had no money. And all the other kids had so much for applicate everything. What other kids do with money? In terms of academic excellence, what ended up happening is I ended up just going to UT, which is like 10 minutes from my high school, and I ended up graduating Phi Beta Kappa. I have a lot of academic accomplishments, but the other kid, that was literally W's kids were the other kids, but everybody else. Our house just had no money. I was reflecting on how New York City and New Yorkers can be poor. I'll tell you how they're poor. There's wherever you do own the house, but there's a zero and negative zero in the checking account. There's no money for gas. There's no food in the refrigerator. It was a desert. And then looking around all the other kids at school, all of them have like wallets full of cash. So this is Donna Wells here in Washington, D.C. Okay, so this is Donna Wells here in Washington, D.C. I want to talk, this is a true story, I want to talk about my time here in Washington. I'm from Texas. Austin, Texas is my hometown. Where anybody is from, I happen to be from Austin, Texas. And meaning my dad worked for the Texas state government. My mom was a nurse, and she worked for different city clinics. I went to Austin Public Schools, so that means I was in Austin Public Schools 1st, 2nd, 3rd, 4th, 5th, 6th, 7th, 8th, 9th, 10th, 11th, 12th grade. And then I went to UT Austin, which is about 10 minutes from my high school. So I think it's fair to call me a townie in the sense that I went 1st through 12th grade at Austin Public Schools. My dad worked for Texas state government, my mom worked for the city, and then I went to UT Austin, which is about 10 minutes from my high school. So, what city is Donna's hometown? Austin. Austin, Texas is my hometown. You know, am I weird? Are the people I meet weird? Am I normal? Are the people I meet normal? Okay, so here in Washington, I have a part-time job at the GW Library, the George Washington Library, and I work in the health sciences library. One of my coworkers, my intention here is to describe Paul, my coworker. This is a real person. Paul is originally from Leicester, England. He has to be in his 50s. One thing, I think he's too old to still work. So my dad, for example, retired from the state government as soon as he could. My cousin in Florida just retired early. So the joke number one is that the Americans want to retire early. The British want to keep working when they're old. So if there's two people, an American and a British person, the American wants to retire early. My dad retired as soon as he could. My cousin in Florida just retired early. She told me, I just retired early. My cousin in Florida, her husband's a fireman. She was a teacher. She just got tired of working and retired early. Her husband, I guess the fireman still works, if firemen work. Right? They live in Florida, if any of that's work. So, Paul, by contrast, I think he's too old to still work, first of all. So in real life, here in Washington, I have this coworker from Leicester, England named Paul. And it seems, I know my cousin retired early. I know my dad retired when I could. And I think to myself, wow, the British don't retire. They just want to keep working when they're old. The second point I want to make is that I live in Washington, D.C., the Federal District. So my dad was born in New York City in 1956. My whole life I was self-conscious, I guess, that we didn't live in New York City. Why am I stuck living in Texas? Why we lived in Texas is my dad worked for the Texas state government. But, you know, my whole upbringing, I was like, why do we have to live here? Okay. Anyway, as an adult, I live in Washington, D.C. I actually live in the same zip code as United States Congress, 20002. Paul, from Leicester, England, by contrast, he lives down in Virginia in Arlington. So in my mind, first, Paul is too old to be working. Second of all, why doesn't he feel self-conscious about living in Virginia? Why doesn't he want to live in the city? Virginia isn't a nice place to live. It's cheap land. It's right by the Pentagon. I don't live down there. I do not live in Virginia. I live in Washington. I live in the same zip code as United States Congress. There's no way I moved all the way here from Texas to go live in Virginia. No way. Okay. Next week, there's a concert coming to the city. I keep getting his name wrong because it's a confusing name. His name is Kane Brown, K-A-N-E Brown. He is a singer. He's originally from Chattanooga, Tennessee. He's the one giving the concert. This is what I have to say about that. I want to say for everyone to take very seriously the American Civil War of the 1860s in the sense that the South lives, in the sense that half of the country, meaning the South, is really not a nice place to live. They really did have, you know, they really did have slaves. They really did, you know. My complaint about Paul from Leicester, England, is that he lives down there in Virginia. That was a slave state. I'm not living in a slave state. I don't live in a slave state. Just call everybody's attention to the North and the South and how they really did used to have slaves down there. One time I actually asked Paul about this, kind of, because I kind of want some explanation from Paul about, you know, you come all the way here for, you actually want Paul to talk a lot even, you know, why do you live in Virginia? Paul's actually a practicing Catholic. He actually goes to a Catholic church in Arlington, Virginia. He rides his bike to work every day. I can't believe that. Paul described how there is lingering black-white down in Virginia in the sense that neighborhoods are grouped. That's what he had to say. What do I think of the fact that Paul said that? I think the message I'm wanting here to send is that Chattanooga, Tennessee is not a nice place to be from. Yeah, it's like the Germans and the South, and the people really were enslaved. The Germans really did kill people. You know, to say that someone's from Chattanooga, Tennessee, that's not nothing. That's not a nice place to be from. There's a us versus them in that. You would not want to be from Chattanooga, Tennessee. That is not a nice place to be from. It was as though Paul was pondering, it's his fault he lives down there. I don't live down there. Yeah, in my mind, I simply accept, that they're different than I am. I accept that they are them and I am me. Us and them. That's what, I guess Paul doesn't, as I do, understand us versus them. Them is the Virginians. Us is the North. You know, Cade Brown is from Chattanooga, Tennessee. He is coming next week to give a concert. And I just want to reiterate here, Chattanooga, Tennessee, that is not a nice place to be from. Arlington's not a nice place to live. Yeah, these are very dangerous places to live. There's real evil there. The Germans really did kill people. The Germans are them. We are us. It's a us versus them here. So, this is Donna Wells here in Washington, D.C. Have a really great day. Okay, so this is Donna Wells here in Washington, D.C. It's Wednesday, November 3rd, 2021. So I just want to make a quick recording, but my intention is to talk about our allies, London and Moscow. So I'm from Texas. My last name is Wells, W-E-L-L-E-S, Wells. I'm a Longhorn. At Texas, I studied Russian. I now live here in Washington, D.C. So I want to make a comment about our allies, the British and the Russians. So, you know, obviously at the end of World War II, you know, they're the allies. In World War I, they're the allies. Essentially, the Americans, the British, and the Russians, our allies. So I was just now at the grocery store here in Washington. Down the street from the United States Capitol building. I just went to the grocery store down the street from the United States Capitol building. It is a tabloid, so it might not be true, but on the cover of the magazine is that Kate Middleton is expecting a fourth child. So down the street from the United States Capitol building, there's a tabloid at the grocery store. This says Kate Middleton is expecting her fourth child. So just pause here. It's some kind of a phenomenon that reminds of the war in the Atlantic and the U-boats. Because it's this image of, as some people are excited, others are devastated. So, you know, as the U-boats struck one of the merchant ships, the German U-boatmen would have been excited and the merchant ship would have been devastated. It's some phenomenon, you know, even at a sporting event, if your team wins, you're excited, the losing team's sad. So I just want to comment on this phenomenon that when Kate Middleton gets pregnant again, as she is excited, not everybody is as excited as she is about that. Because it's money, not everybody, I guess, went to St. Andrews. Four kids sounds like a lot. Same thing happened for Wayne and Colleen Rooney. You know, when Colleen got pregnant that fourth time, everybody was excited. You know, when a woman gets pregnant, everybody's excited. Moreover, though, here locally, the hockey team, the Washington Capitals, there's four Russians on the hockey team: Ovechkin, Orlov, Samsonov, and Kuznetsov. All of them are married to these Russian women, and then the Russian women started having babies. And then there's a story on the internet that Anastasia Ovechkin started throwing baby showers for the other Russian hockey wives. They all live in Arlington, Virginia, near the practice rink. There's four, they're in the world. What is true is that there are four Russians on the hockey team right now: Kuznetsov, Orlov, Samsonov, and Ovechkin. I think they're all of them married to Russian women. And then at least three of them have kids. And I've read on the internet that Anastasia Ovechkin started throwing baby showers for the other Russian hockey wives. And so recently, the season just started. The kids are now old enough to go to the games, and then they'll wear their dad's jersey. So Dmitry Orlov's kid had an Orlov jersey. And then all these seats are right near the rink. So it's this phenomenon that the Russian hockey players have so many kids that their wives and kids take up all the seats near the hockey game. I'm just going to repeat that one more time. In Washington, D.C., at Capital One Arena, there is a phenomenon that the Russian hockey players' wives have so many kids that the wives and little kids take up all the seats near the hockey rink. And so the Americans are sitting there watching the game. In front of them are these Russian women and these little kids wearing Orlov and Kuznetsov jerseys. So the Americans have worse seats than these 3 and 4 year old little Russian kids. So this is Donna Wells here in Washington, D.C. Have a really great day. Okay, there's actually lots to say. This is Donna Wells here in Washington, D.C. It's Saturday, November 6th, 2021. So, about the hockey team. There's this phenomenon that there's all these Russians in the league. And so, for example, the Washington Capitals, there's four Russians on the team. Kuznetsov, Orlov, Ovechkin, and Samsonov. All four of them are married, and then at least three of them have little kids. So now there's all these Russian wives. There's a group of four Russian wives and their kids at all the practices and games. So when the Washington Capitals practice at the Kettler Iceplex in Arlington, Virginia, there are four Russian wives and their kids at the practices. So it's not just that the league has hired four Russians to play on the team. They've all brought their wives, and then their wives starting having a bunch of kids. So, just Alex Ovechkin specifically is from Moscow. I'm 38 years old. I'm from Texas. I'm 38. I'm from Texas. Alex is 36 and he's from Moscow. His wife is younger than he is. Her name's Anastasia. She's from Moscow. So there's all these complaints that Alex, he still makes $10 million a year. There's all these complaints that Alex is a kind of a part-time hockey player, and for the most part, just is kind of married and Anastasia making babies. Because the kids are kind of young. When he's injured, it seems like he's out of shape. So I'm inclined to think that Alex makes too much money and that he spends too much time with his wife. Because they have these two young kids at the house. So just put that aside. Last season, Alex, just not me saying it, the league fined him twice. The first time, it's because he was in a hotel room with the other three Russian players and they weren't wearing their masks. So he was fined for violating COVID protocols. The second time, he was fined because he was angry and so he broke his hockey stick. He broke his hockey stick on the bench. So those seem kind of, in terms of misconduct, what that it seems like he makes, still it seems like he makes too much money. The first fine had to do with the hotel room. The second fine is that he broke his own hockey stick. So I'm 38, I'm from Texas. I'm inclined to think they pay him too much and he's out of shape. The league fined Alex Ovechkin twice last year. The first time had to do with the hotel room, and the second time he broke his own hockey stick. So this is Donna Wells here in Washington, D.C. Okay, so let me just briefly talk about New England. I'm actually a member of the Mayflower Society. It's, I guess, the General Society of Mayflower Descendants. I'm also a daughter of the American Revolution. My patriot was Daniel Warner, who died at the Battle of Bennington in 1777. Bennington is a place in Vermont. My grandma, my dad's mom, was born in Springfield, Vermont. It's her dad's relative that was a descendant of Daniel Warner. So, who is your patriot? My patriot is Daniel Warner, who died in Vermont in 1977 at the Battle of Bennington. So, just in order to establish all that, you have to have either one primary source document or two secondary source documents. So, on file at the DAR Museum is my birth certificate, my dad's, his mom's, and then it goes me, my dad, his mom, her dad, his dad, and up in that direction's dad was Daniel Warner, who died in 1777 in Vermont. Of course, it was a different relative. The last name was Hopkins. That was on the Mayflower Society. Mayflower. I'm actually a real expert at the DAR. I did my own. For the Mayflower application, I just copied my dad's sister's application. So, if asked, this is what I'll say. I am a real expert in the DAR in the sense, if you look at my application, all that really is right. It really is everybody's either birth or death or whatever certificate. But, it was 1777. So, my dad's mom was born in 1923. Her dad, his dad, and then it's kind of a half dozen or less, right? I just know that's right. If I had the application in front of me, I'd be like, Donna Marjorie, Donna Henry Marjorie. Does that make sense? I just know that's right. I know it's me, my dad, his mom, her dad, his dad, until in 1777 was Daniel Werner. My aunt did all the Mayflower stuff. Obviously, that goes back, a long time. Anyway, I didn't do that. But I am a real expert in the DAR. Ask me about the Mayflower stuff. It's possible they just make that up. I don't know. I know I didn't make up the DAR stuff, though, because, like I said, it's me, my dad, his mom, her dad, his dad, and then, to 1777. The Mayflower stuff, maybe I'll then make that up. I don't know. But my aunt did it. I just copied her application. But I am officially a member of the Mayflower Society. I have a number. Just put that aside. New England consists of Maine, New Hampshire, Vermont, Massachusetts, Connecticut, and Rhode Island. So, this is what I have to say. I own more than one. I own at least two books, autobiographies of Vincent Jones, the actor, soccer player. His dad was in a labor union, and if asked, there, of course, I don't know if in England, there's the phrase keeping up with the Joneses, keeping up with the Joneses. That is a phrase here. It means that somehow you'll lose all your money if you do that, keeping up with the Joneses. Today Jerry Jones owns the Dallas Cowboys. But Vincent Jones, the actor, his dad was in a labor union as if he was Jimmy Hoffa. He just, like, you wonder if he killed people or something. Is Vincent Jones's dad seems like a really mysterious person. But he was in a labor union. And what I have to say about that is, it's possible that his relatives moved to Rhode Island. Just because somehow my sense of New England, somehow that could have... in The Departed, that comes up about Providence. One thing they might have kicked him out of Massachusetts and Vermont and Maine. If I had to say, somehow I don't think I'm related to Vincent Jones because how he described his dad, somehow they're kind of really intense labor union guys. And if I had to say, I wouldn't be surprised if some of his relatives moved to Rhode Island and Providence, Rhode Island. It's also where the War College is. The War College is in Newport, Rhode Island. Okay, good morning. This is Dada Wells here in Washington, D.C. It's Sunday morning. So Alex Ovechkin was in the newspaper this morning. So I'm in the world. I'm 38 years old. I was born in 1983. I'm from Texas, but I was actually born in North Carolina in 1983. Donna Wells, born North Carolina in 1983. My dad was born Henry Wells, New York City, 1956. I try to, as I can, do I have a message? This is my message. In America, kind of, what are we stuck with in the sense that you really are stuck with that? One thing you're stuck with is your birth certificate. A lot of reasons. So just last week, I guess, I filled out all this unemployment paperwork, and they asked for my Social Security card. Anytime you start a new job, this particular document, you really have to have that close to you a lot. Your job knows about it. It is exactly what city and state where you were. Yeah, remarkably, maybe it is like a country. Remarkably, how true is that about the American government and federalism? In the world, my birth certificate says 1983, North Carolina. My dad says Henry Wells, 1956, New York City. That means exactly for me and him what that means. That I you know, everybody's challenges along the way. You know, New York is where the banks are. You know, if you live right by the bank, you probably have a lot of money. That is right where the UN is. If you grew up next to the UN, you know, all these New Yorkers, that's where West Point is. You know, if you start out in New York City, you know, might you work at a bank, might you work for the UN, you know, you could go to West Point. My dad is so funny. You know, he always needs dental work. We never have a savings account. Because he grew up by the bank, so to speak, all of his checks bounce. He always needs dental work. His car is always really dirty. My dad's checking account is always in the negative. He always needs dental work. His car is always dirty. I guess because in New York City there's so much money, they just don't care if their car is dirty. It doesn't bother them about dental work. And who cares if his checking account's negative? My entire childhood was the checking account negative. My dad's car was dirty. And my dad always needed dental work. So I'm now 38. So as an adult, my checking account is always very, very healthy. I don't need any dental work. I actually don't own a car. I live right in the middle of Washington. I live right in Washington, D.C. My dad, for a living, his job, he worked for the Texas state government. So just put that aside. In terms of bird notice, does everybody have favorite characters from Bird Notice? I really like Gilroy because he drove this Maserati, I think. One of my favorite characters is Gilroy because he drove a Maserati. So he showed up in Miami and he drives these, even for Miami, these really luxury Italian-made sedans. That's what I really like. My dad's brother lived in Dallas, and he drove an Alfa Romeo. So in Bird Notice, one character I really like is Gilroy. Because even in Miami, Gilroy showed up in this really, really nice Italian-made sedan. And that's what he drove around Miami. The other character I like is Victor, and that's because he was really, really fit. In terms of what kind of fitness, he could run. Just in terms of Victor and Victor's fitness, Victor. There was an episode where Victor was a lot more fit than Michael was. In the episode, Michael appeared kind of fat and slow. You're right. From Victor, what I learned is, regardless, even if it's for 10 minutes, you do need to then appear fitter than the other guy. How true is that? You know, the gazelle and the cheetah. So, you know, on any day, I don't know, but in that particular episode, Victor did, for that 10 minutes, he was in that time, in that moment, more fit than Michael. So that might be true about you know, Alex from Moscow. You know, he's taller than me, but, you know, is there some kind of a fitness metric that I actually can compete with him and win? So this is Donna Wells here in Washington, D.C. Okay, so this is Donna Wells here in Arlington, Virginia. I was in yoga class in Arlington, so beware here. The Virginians are German immigrants. Virginia was a slave state. I don't live down here. So I don't think there are any exceptions. The exceptions might be the Canadian hockey players, because kind of isn't Virginia like Canada? Right. Just my own opinion about it is that it is unethical to have a Virginia mailing address. Right. So, across the state line, it used to be slaves walking around here. It's really not okay. But in the yoga class, I really am just out here to take a yoga class. In the yoga class with me, there was it was a man. To describe him, the point of the story is to describe this person. He was really overweight. He was the most overweight man in the class. For better or worse, he had a UCLA t-shirt on. He had nice Under Armour pants on, but he had a UCLA t-shirt on. And after the class, I asked him, "Did you go to UCLA?" And I found out that yes, he did go to UCLA, but he is not from Los Angeles originally. He is originally from a small town near Fresno, California. Anybody could take out a map and look, where is Fresno, California? It's kind of out in the middle of nowhere in Southern California, toward Arizona. So Los Angeles is on the Pacific Ocean. Kind of north and inland is Fresno. He's from a town near there. Maybe, what does the words Fresno, California mean to you? If somebody said that particular city, Fresno, California, what would you think? What does that mean to you? What it mean, this is what Fresno, California means to me. I graduated from high school in 2001. Kind of about then or so, there was this football player. He was the quarterback for Fresno State. And it was like a UFO, kind of. He was some kind of off-the-charts genius college football quarterback. Fresno State might not necessarily be a big sports school, but who has everybody heard of? My hometown's Austin. Kind of about the time I graduated from high school, there was some kind of a, it was like an off the charts, really, 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 some kind of a genius college football quarterback. And his name was David Carr with two R's for Fresno State. So he no long he eventually got drafted. I understand that his brother now plays for the Raiders. I think his name is Derek Carr, but let me just stay here with David Carr. So I've said what happened to him in college. That is what happened to him in college. He graduated from Fresno State, some kind of an off-the-charts college football quarterback genius. What happened to him? What happened to him is that he ended up playing for the Houston Texans. This is another UFO story. Just understand that this is a UFO story. What happened when he played for the Houston Texans is that, what is a sack? A sack is when the quarterback himself gets tackled, kind of before he can throw the ball. So the Houston Texans offensive line, it's like the opposing team just went right through them. And it was like every game, like David Carr got sacked 10 and 20 times. That was his professional career. I can't believe he ever won a Super Bowl. I think I looked that up. Maybe he was on a team that won, but he didn't play or something. But that is what happened. That is the life journey of David Carr as a football player. I think now he's an announcer. Just Fresno, California has this college called Fresno State. I think there's a baseball player, Aaron Judge, the Yankees from near there. It's this kind of region of Southern California near Arizona. And David Carr went to Fresno State. He ended up playing professionally for the Houston Texans. It's two UFO stories. The UFO story is when he was in college, and just the whole country agreed he was some kind of a can't-believe-he's-real football quarterback genius. When he went to play for the Houston Texans, the second part of the UFO story is that every single game, he himself got tackled 10 and 20 times. So that is the end of the story. So this is Dada Wells here in Arlington, Virginia. Have a really great day. Okay, so one thing to be funny here, but all of these facts are true. So Ray's wife is named Aaron. Aaron is older than I am. So we both went to the same high school at Austin, Texas, LBJ High School. That is about a stone's throw kind of from where the Bush twins went to high school. But it's the science and math high school. So both me and Aaron went to the same high school. Aaron was the captain of the UMass women's soccer team when Brianna Scurry was on the team. So just in life, there's the really, really famous U.S. women's soccer team. The goalkeeper is named Brianna Scurry. She was at UMass. Aaron and her were on the same team at the same time, but Aaron was the captain. To say Aaron played on the team, Aaron is a very, 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 you know, in the world of college sports, Ray's wife Aaron was the captain of the UMass team when Brianna Scurry was the goalkeeper. That's just a true fact. She and I both went to the same high school. So, in terms of me playing soccer, Aaron was also in the marching band, but I was in the marching band also, but high school is 4 years. All 4 years, I was in band, jazz band, and marching band. I was always in the top bands, but I wasn't necessarily the first chair. So Aaron wasn't in the jazz band, right? So when I showed up to soccer practice, I had just come from 3 different band classes. My mom played, when she was young, she played both the flute and the clarinet. My mom's brother was in the Air Force. He played the clarinet. There was no way I was dropping out of band, but I wasn't just in band. I was in band, jazz band, and I had just come from 3 different band classes. But, for example, the jazz band, all these different bands have tiers. For a marching band, I was a section leader, and I was the president of this other thing. I was in the top bands. I was not always the top chair, though. So I would always be in the top band, but I would be like at the end. I would be at the bottom half of the top band. But to compare me, though, with Matt Durham works at Los Alamos. His senior year of high school, he was not in the jazz band, and the whole time he was in this. Matt's senior year of high school, he was not in the marching band. The whole time he was in the second jazz band. So all 4 years of high school, I was in the top bands of band, jazz band, and marching band. Aaron just wasn't in jazz band. Matt, his senior year, wasn't in marching band, and the whole time he was in the second jazz band. Okay, so last night I went to a yoga class, and I never go over there. I live in Northeast Washington, D.C., but this is about 2 miles from where I live. I walked all the way there and I went to this yoga studio. It's called the Ivy City Bikram Yoga Works. And it says on the description that it is black owned. So, you know, I'm reflecting on some stuff is difficult to describe, but if you look at the description of this yoga studio, they describe themselves as black owned. So they still make you wear the masks when you check in for the classes, but you can take the mask off when you take the class. I cannot breathe with the masks on. I think I've just developed like gallstones because of the masks. I walk everywhere and I have a car, so to walk all the way to the studio to put a mask on, I like couldn't breathe at all. So I walk into the studio and immediately all of them started screaming at me, telling me to put a mask on. And then I looked over and there was this older black lady sitting down. She wasn't wearing a mask. So I said to these people, she's not wearing one. I said to the yoga studio employees, I pointed to this old woman not wearing a mask, she isn't wearing one. So they made her put on a mask and me put on a mask. I then said to the old woman, I'm going to watch and make sure you keep that mask on, right? Okay. Why is this a British Army joke? The British are, like, dumb occasionally about command structure. So just conceptually, they might, right, in terms of the army and command structure, when should you tell other people what to do? When can other people tell you what to do? Right? Does everybody get this? The British are vulnerable to this sometimes because sometimes they're like Scotsmen or something, right? They might not instinctually know why don't do what he says. Does that make sense? It's some kind of an army joke in command structure. If somebody tells you to do something, should you do that? Okay, morning. This is Santa Wells. It's April 1st, 2022. So I want to talk about Texas. This might not be well known. There's what's called the Texas Relays. That's in Austin, Texas. That's at the UT Austin track and field. I think maybe they have it at the football stadium even, but it's called the Texas Relays. That is a track and field event. Okay, so when I was in college, I ran a half marathon, which is 13.1 miles, in 2 hours, 1 minute, and 58 seconds. It was the 3M half marathon. It was the 3M half marathon. 2 hours, 1 minute, and 58 seconds. I saw it because they give you a belt or whatever. It was published in the official race. So it said Donna Wells, 2:01.58. It was the 3M half marathon in Austin, Texas. Okay. Just this morning, I just took a yoga class. It was a 7 a.m. yoga class. And the yoga teacher, she'd run a half marathon last weekend, the same distance. I said, what was your time? She said 3 hours. She took an entire extra hour to run the same distance. What is the point I'm making? The point I'm making is that the locals are German immigrants, and it's like they're not good at sports and stuff. And then it's like weird about the police and the prisons. This woman and I both ran the same distance, 13.1 miles. I ran it in 2 hours. She ran it in 3 hours. The locals are German immigrants, and it's like that's why they're weird about the police and the prisons. They're just some kind of a slow. Does that make sense? We both ran 13.1 miles. I ran it in 2 hours. She ran it in 3 hours. It is because the locals are German immigrants, and it's like they're slow and they're into the police and the prisons. Okay, so I just walked by Capitol Hill. So Austin, Texas is my hometown. I graduated from Texas Phi Beta Kappa in 2005. I majored in Russian, but I have a minor in government. I kind of, for a couple years, tried to, work in elections and Texas state politics. So, for example, Lyndon Johnson's dad was an elected member of the Texas state legislature. Lyndon Johnson actually grew up in Johnson City, which is a stone's throw from Austin. My dad, for a living, worked for the Texas state government, but he was an economist. Different than my dad, kind of for a couple years, maybe 5 years, I thought I made a go at actually kind of like Lyndon's dad. Really kind of working at, the Texas State Capitol. I have a friend from high school and college. His mom worked near the Capitol, but, I was a little bit unique among my high school and college friends in that I actually tried to make a living working in elections and for candidates and stuff. Like, there are a list of names of Texas government candidates that I've worked for. This is what I have to say about that. I now live right by Capitol Hill. Kind of what really I learned I couldn't do is I kind of can't work for a specific candidate because it's like my stock is his stock too much. So truly, if he loses the election, you're out of a job. People can become, for example, professional, like a chief of staff. They can kind of be Democrat. A lot of this is like word of mouth and building a clientele. People can kind of become like known as a Democratic Party chief of staff. That is a different personality type than me. They're just not going to hire me. What I could do is I could, exactly like my dad even, what my dad did for a living was spreadsheets pertaining to the Texas state budget. What I could do for these campaigns reliably was spreadsheet-based and finance budgets. I have 2 points I want to make. The first part of why I couldn't do it is I was not successful in the sense I did it. I learned not to work for specific candidates because my stock is their stock too much. Truly, if he loses the election, you're out of a job. You do not have a job. Your stock is their stock. Your stock is their stock. The second option is it really is word of mouth and kind of getting to know people. You can become like a Democratic Party chief of staff. They're just not going to hire me. they're just not going to hire me. So, for example, whoever Biden's chief of staff is, I briefly for a while knew one of Obama's chiefs of staff. A chief, that is a different personality type. They're just not going to hire me for that job. What my dad did for the Texas state government is spreadsheet based. And he looked at the budget. In the end, that is what I could do for these campaigns, is I could look at fundraising budgets. That is what they would hire me, so to speak, to do. Okay, so I'm walking home. I actually believe that I am the world's living greatest Russian scholar. I believe that about myself. I'm Donna Wells. I believe I am the greatest living Russian scholar. I went to really prestigious schools. At Texas, I was there when they had a civil defense program. It was from the Carter administration, so it's not like I just... At Texas, I formally attended a civil defense Russian language program. And I studied in St. Petersburg at the chemistry faculty. Additionally, my grandpa attended the Moscow Council of Foreign Ministers in 1947. I am now 38 years old. I've been doing this a long time. I read my grandpa's own book when I was really young. When I was 20 years old, I went to Russia to go live there for a year. And I traveled all the way to Mongolia, and I spent 2 weeks in Ulaanbaatar on the train. You know, I've been in Washington 9 years now, and I work at it every day. You know, the New Yorkers, you know, how do you get to Carnegie Hall? Practice, practice, practice. Every day I read the Russian news. I really, really work at it still. I've been really working at it, you know, since I was really young. It was my grandpa's own book I read about Russia, because he had been to the conference. So, you know, practice. How do you get to Carnegie Hall? Practice. I went to really good schools about it. They're officially civil defense language schools. And I studied the chemistry faculty in St. Petersburg. There's a specific, I think, points I'm wanting to make here about the land of Russia. And so St. Petersburg is in the north. It's a port on the Baltic Sea. It used to be land that belonged to Sweden. And that's how far north it is. Of course, Sweden's in Scandinavia. I was there in 2004 or 2005. And that was during the Beslan hostage crisis. And the point I'm wanting to make is this. That was a truly shocking and horrific incident. But the paradox of it was that in St. Petersburg, it was completely safe still. There is something to... Because Ukraine is so far from St. Petersburg, what does that mean? I think it means that what's going on in Ukraine naturally, because of the land, is naturally maybe confined to Ukraine. You know, conceptually land use, you know, Ukraine is so far from St. Petersburg that you know, you wonder about, right? Because Ukraine is so far from St. Petersburg, you know, if Ukraine comes up ever, you wonder about that, right? Just stuff, you know, obviously, you know, your neighbor, you see him every day. Someone who lives far from you, you know, that wouldn't come up a lot. You know, if you have relatives that live far away, you might not talk to them much. I'm thoughtful that it seems like there's a lot of Ukraine everything, even here in Washington. If it were up to me, I'd like these Ukrainians to kind of stay, you know, what am I saying? I am suspicious about kind of anything Ukraine where I am, right? You know, how much Ukraine does there need to be in Washington? Does that make sense? That's true in St. Petersburg. That's true in London. That's true in Amsterdam. I am suspicious of how much Ukraine there needs to be here in Washington. You know, Washington's farther from Ukraine than St. Petersburg. You know, as they say, some kind of an unnatural, you know, of all things. So, I guess that's the point I'm wanting to make. That I was living in St. Petersburg during the Beslan hostage crisis. At the time, it was so far away from St. Petersburg, it would have been ridiculous to feel unsafe. I think it's ridiculous for these Ukrainians here in Washington. Does it make sense? I'm skeptical about much about Ukraine that is far from Ukraine, right? Okay, so I'm a Longhorn. Both my parents are Longhorns. My high school is about 10 minutes from UT Austin. When I was really little, some of my earliest memories is my dad would take me with him to the LBJ school. I have a vivid memory. You almost wonder about the Germans and UFO stuff. I have a vivid memory of me running through the halls of the LBJ school. And I guess I started yelling really loud. And in my memory, I remember seeing people in the other rooms. And they looked at me because I started yelling. But that was when I can't believe how young I would have been, because that would have been in the mid-80s. I was born in 1983. But in my own memory, I do remember my dad took me to the LBJ school when I was like 3 or 4 years old, when he was a student there. The memory of it was me running screaming through the hallway. But when I was a student at UT, I graduated in 2005. My degree was in Russian. I never lived on campus. But at the time, I smoked cigarettes a lot, and they wouldn't have let me smoke in the library anyway. So it's like, never was I ever in the library the whole time. You know, it's not like I never once went in there, but that's not where I would have gone. The first reason is that I didn't live on campus, but the second reason is that I smoked cigarettes so much. You know, the few times I did go to the library, I would have had to get up, walk all the way outside every 10 minutes to smoke my cigarette. you know, I graduated Phi Beta Kappa. I got every award you could get. How I did it is I smoked, how many packs of cigarettes every day. You know, these people, the Mormons, don't drink caffeine. I graduated Phi Beta Kappa with my degree in Russian, and I was like, I smoked a cigarette every 10 minutes is how I did it. Right? Just, you know, talk about UTS and Donna, how'd you do it? Well, how I did it, I smoked a cigarette every 10 minutes. And so I couldn't have done that in the library. But when I went to graduate school at Georgia Tech, and by that point I had stopped smoking cigarettes. And there was this, I took Chinese foreign policy as a class, and you had to write this really long paper. And what am I saying? I do not have a whole lot of life experience at doing homework in a library. Does that make sense? But when I was at Georgia Tech, I no longer smoked cigarettes. And so there was a specific day near the end of the semester. I just was like, well, why not? I walked over to the library. That really worked because I just sat at that computer all day and I wrote that paper. And here now I'm at Catholic. I write so many papers, I can write a paper in like 10 minutes. So I still don't need to go to the library. But where I am right now with it is that the computers at the library are really nice. And so it is functionally easier to write the paper at the library than at my apartment. Okay, so I think this is really funny. I really, really love Jonathan Rhys Meyers. He's one of my favorites. He's so cool. My mom and I watched The Tudors like 10 or 20 times. Ask my mom if she's seen The Tudors show. Me and my mom have watched The Tudors like 20 times, every episode. We started talking about, like, Anne Boleyn, about who is a maid and maidenhead and stuff. Jonathan Rhys Meyers is Henry in The Tudors show. He's originally from Ireland. The whole time, my mom and I love that show so much. Okay, in the show, just, if I have British colleagues, I more than you have seen that show. My mom more than you guys have seen that show. My mom and I started talking like Anne Boleyn in the show. Okay. In the show, the doctors tell him to, like, be intimate a lot because that's good for his health. Is that good advice for Alex Ovechkin? Is Alex supposed to do it a lot with his wife for his health? Okay, so I'm walking. Talk about Ricky Hatton. So I'm 38, he's 43. Last night I heard him say in an interview, I've been in Washington 9 years now. I guess, you know, I'm thoughtful. I once attended a think tank event and on energy. And it was this French woman, energy expert, and she said, my comment is that kind of East Coast and New Yorkers, they come up with these words for time frames. So, you know, the next fiscal quarter, the Europeans have come up with medium, I think this woman was saying 50 years is a medium range assessment. I have a real warning to any colleagues about all that. Is anything going to be really precise in 50 years? I'm hoping, you know, to repeat that, I'm kind of getting the weeds here. I want to get back to Ricky Hatton, but I've been here in Washington 9 years, and Ricky was saying that it was just 5 or 6 or 7 years ago that he was really sick. He is now 43. He owns a gym, and when Wayne Rooney was here, I would have given anything if they would have just let him talk into a microphone for like 10 minutes. You know, England is so far away, and the British anyway never talk. But both of them are from Northern England. Wayne is from Liverpool, and Ricky is from Manchester. I'd just give it anything if they would have made Wayne talk every morning. Just what they're saying. Because, you know, in my life, I've never been to Manchester, I've never been to Liverpool. My want is for Ricky to talk more, and I'm very, very, very sensitive about specific, like, now I'm 38 and I weigh 137 pounds. Ricky, you're 43. You know, what does 44 and 45 and 46 look like? But to just repeat what I said earlier, the FYI of that is, it's kind of East Coast and European. They come up with new dumb words for time frames. So, you know, the New Yorkers and, you know, fiscal quarter. The Europeans seem to think that 50 years is a medium term. I'm saying all that's like just make, but you know, the same people can't be on time ever. You know, the same people can't show up to work reliably. You know, what will be true in France in 50 years is funny. So, you know, what will be true in France in 50 years? Right now about Ricky, I'm like hypersensitive. I'm now 38. I weigh 137 pounds. What do you think 44 and 45 look like?